Greetings, all. Patrick Brown here. Welcome to Crown and Crozier. Chances are you know today's guest as an accomplished Catholic author and dynamic speaker. What you may not know about Kimberly Hahn, though, is that for almost 6 years, she's represented the interests of the residents and taxpayers of Steubenville, Ohio, as their councilwoman at large at City Hall. In this episode, we chat with Kimberly about her journey into politics and her experience serving on City Council. Along the way, we cover a broad range of issues, from what living the Catholic social principle of subsidiarity looks like on the ground, to why the political loyalties of small towns in the American Rust Belt have evolved over the years, to why we need more Catholics in public office, especially for purposes of occasionally reminding constituents that dying outside a state of grace is actually the worst thing that can happen to anyone. This episode represents an awesome milestone from Crown and Crozier, our first interview with an elected official. A sincere thanks to all of our listeners for helping us reach this waypoint in the early history of our program. We really appreciate you tuning in, and we trust you'll enjoy this installment of the podcast on church, state, and faithful citizenship.
There are two swords, and the question is, which sword is superior, the spiritual sword or the temporal sword?
And without God, democracy will not and cannot long endure.
I die His Majesty's good servant, at God's first.
In so many ways, for so many reasons, we are overjoyed to welcome our guest for this episode of Crown and Crozier. Kimberly Hahn, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Patrick. It's great to be with you.
This is going to be a lot of fun chatting with you, among other things. It seems like we're dealing with one of the best kept secrets in the church in North America. I was mentioning to some friends and family recently that we were preparing for this conversation with you. Sure enough, everyone knows you're an accomplished Catholic author with great works on marriage and your conversion story in Rome, Sweet Home. Lots of folks are familiar with all the wonderful talks you've given across North America and the world as a dynamic speaker. The beloved and blessed podcast that you host. And of course, everyone knows that you're married to old, what's his name? But it was a surprise to a lot of folks to hear that Kimberly Hahn is also a politician and holds elected office. So we're delighted to be able to help get people better acquainted with that unique hat that you wear in public life and to hear about your experience on the front lines of politics and government in your community. This is also a special treat for Crown and Crozier because you are our first elected official on the show. So happy to celebrate that milestone with you.
Yes, thank you.
So why don't we get right into things, beginning with your journey into politics. Perhaps you can let us know, what was your inspiration to throw your hat into the ring?
Yeah, well, over the years, I've always been concerned about where faith meets culture and how important it is for us to engage in the public square. And so for many, many years, I've been involved in particular issues, the issue of abortion and the issue of pornography. But they were small insertions, would you say, into influencing politicians, trying to educate people better and engage Christian people in addressing these very practical issues that really have an impact, even not directly on your own family, in your own neighborhood, in your cities. And so we are impacted. It's not enough to just close the doors and have our family just be concerned with ourselves. I had homeschooled for 26 years, and a wonderful opportunity came for our youngest son to attend St. Gregory the Great Academy. And so we went from homeschooling all these years to having our youngest actually go away to live and study. And we sat across the table from each other, and I said to Scott, now what? I had poured myself into not just our family, but the homeschool community here. And all of that now was ending. And all he said was, maybe it's time for politics. And I just looked across the table because that is not his impulse. If you ask him, out of 10 areas of interest, it would be 10th. And yet he could see this could be a blending of my own interests, my availability, my ability. Why not see if we open the door, what the Lord might do? So I began to contact various people that I respect greatly and ask, what do you think about my ability? And could I campaign hard enough? Because I didn't know whether or not I would be known here. And in fact, what I found out doing my door-to-door campaigning was that many people did not know Scott, let alone did not know me, wow. even though it's a small community. And part of that probably had to do with homeschooling, where I would have networked more at the public school or the Catholic school had our children attended there full time. As it turns out, because of my children's interests, two of my children did play football for the local public high school. And so I was a football mom. And that alone got me at least 5 votes because they were so impressed that I was a football mom. They didn't really go into, you know, how many of my children attended school, but the fact that they played football for Big Red. And then I was also a soccer mom for 2 of my children at the Catholic high school. And those things had happened because my children had the interests and I wanted to have them pursue them. What I didn't know was it would actually open some doors for me as I campaigned. I decided to run for the one council position that the entire city elects. And I decided that it was very important to me to speak to the people directly. So I did door to door for over 7,000 doors. I went to every door, every apartment, every home in our city, with the help of some friends, but I personally did almost all the doors myself. And I had people who said, no politician has ever knocked on my door. So you have my vote and I don't even know what you stand for. Huh. Now, of course, I want them to be better educated and I would like them to actually champion the things I champion. But going to the houses, going to the projects, going to the homes for the elderly, and saying, I want to know your concerns. One person said, well, I'll never vote for you. You're a Republican. I'd never vote for you. And I said, but if I'm elected, I'll still represent you. What are your concerns? Taking time to listen really equipped me to lead. And I was told, first of all, our demographic is 6 Democrats to 1 Republican. So don't tell anyone you're Republican. I said, well, that is what I am. And so I'm not about to hide that, but maybe I can help bridge some of the divide. People said, don't talk about Franciscan University because there's still tensions between the town and the gown. And I said, I'm not going to hide that. I don't have to lead with it, but I'm not going to hide it. But as I campaigned, people said over and over again, thank God for that university, because when our steel mills closed, the university stayed strong. And our city might have folded without that university. So there's a lot more gratitude. There's a lot more openness, both to a more conservative point of view and also to the university than I was told initially. So as it turns out, really against most odds, even the paper chose the incumbent to recommend for people. And, you know, people told me left and right, you'd never get elected because you're a woman, because you're Republican, because you're Catholic, etc. I won with a decisive vote, over 60% of the vote. And so I served 4 years, and then I ran for re-election a year and a half ago, and I had 2 competitors, and I got an even higher percentage, almost 70% of the vote. So it has been a tremendous encouragement. I believe that I have a forward-looking perspective, that I approach things differently than perhaps some people, in the sense that I want to know, how do we move forward? How do we redevelop our downtown? How do we bring our marina back? How do we strengthen our parks? How do we address the issues of our water and sewer infrastructure that are in desperate need of revitalization? How do we deal with the nearly 900 vacant properties that we have, et cetera? And I find all of it fascinating. I believe that it has strengthened my hand in being specific with people about how I will assist. And I would say it's been an expansion of my motherhood to really take the city and the people of the city into my heart.
A lot to unravel there. I'm curious, mindful of all the odds you were going up against, not the least of which is your faith and your openness about that. How did you find that you were able to disarm any skepticism or potential hostility or dismissiveness on the part of some folks as it relates to being a Catholic, as it relates to being connected to the university? To what do you attribute your success in navigating that and getting the people's confidence, as you know, by a very comfortable margin?
I really believe it's meeting people face to face. We did a number of neighborhood teas over the summer before we hit the fall and the full campaign running. I think we had something like 30 coffees or teas around the city. And what I would do is I would go to a neighborhood where I knew two or three people very well. And then we would work together on a guest list of as many people within a few blocks, hosted in their home, somebody they knew. It would be tantamount to an endorsement because they're inviting them into their home to hear me. I would talk about the issues that I felt were important. I would take questions. And I think as they began to have a personal relationship with me, it had a powerful impact to the point that I helped recruit a couple of people to run for office who both just won, a gentleman of great character, great faith, and they are going to be outstanding council members. I did a lot of door-to-door for one of them. And as I knocked, people came to the door I did not know. And they said, I voted for you the first time, and I was happy to vote for you the second time. And if you endorse them, they have my vote. Based on not even a relationship yet, but seeing that I was a person of my word. I think that we tend to think of politics as slimy, as something tainted. And I think that totally depends on the individual. There are people who are underhanded, who work against what you want to do. They collaborate with others and try to set you up and make you look bad. And the key, I think, is to pray a great deal for wisdom and insight, mm-hmm. to build the relationships across the aisle with your other council members as much as you possibly can, and to be that person of integrity even when others are not.
I'm interested to learn more about your constituents and your community. As you were saying in some of your remarks around the challenges and priorities that you had for your campaign and your platform, and it seems like there are challenges with drugs and crime and poverty and downtown revitalization in Steubenville. You juxtapose that, though, with the larger county that you folks live in, Jefferson County. The early part of the 21st century, Jefferson County was going to the Democrats, to President Obama, by a few points. And in the last couple of election cycles, the county seems to be tilting Republican. And in fact, in the last two elections, the Republican candidate, Donald Trump, won by very considerable margins. So tell us a little bit more about that dynamic, your immediate community in Steubenville, but then also your place in the larger county. And
right. It does speak to Ohio Valley values. Many, many lifelong Democrats have embraced family values and are pro-life in our area. And they have seen the Democratic Party leave them, abandon them. And so I think over the last maybe 10 years, people have begun to say, I have been a Democrat because my father and grandfather were. But the party has left me, and so I now identify as a Republican. And it has opened some new doors. Part of why I think Republicans have done so much better in our county and in our city is that we've been able to articulate a true message of the principles of the Republican Party. And we've stopped being painted as simply white, elite, business people who have no consideration for the poor. I really embrace the Catholic principle of solidarity. I don't think it's the role of the government to be charitable, but I do believe it's the role of the people to be charitable personally. I don't think it's the role of the government to create jobs. But I do think the role of the government is to make it easier for people to take that initiative and be job creators. We need to do what we can do. People cannot create their own water systems. Water systems are something cities need to do. Water, sewer, sanitation, that kind of thing. We do what we can do. People need to take care of their sidewalks. The city needs to take care of the streets. And so it's in that collaboration where we don't, when I say being a mother of the city, I don't mean simply trying to coddle people. I want to give a true hand up to people, not simply handouts to people. And I think this has come into much sharper focus as the progressives have really taken over the Democratic Party. And in our county, that's been the case as well. And they have begun to lose many key races. And people are seeing themselves, at least more broadly, they are seeing themselves as conservatives. And I can give you a couple examples. So this is the first time in the history of Steubenville that we are aware of that we have a Republican mayor, and we have 4 out of 7 on council now. As of last Tuesday, we have a Republican majority on council. Now, we are all for the people of Steubenville. We are all actually fiscal conservatives. And so we have all worked together all my 6 years serving so far, and I have two more left, to balance our budget. For decades, our city did not balance a budget. But every year I have served on council, we have functioned in the black. And that's even through the pandemic. That is even through some very major issues that we had to deal with water disruption and some crises that we've had here in town. We still need to do a better job on the drug issues. We have many people who need to actually go to a facility outside of town to break some of those relationships, give them a chance to disconnect from the very people who draw them into this. And yet we still don't have any drug rehabilitation facility that people can go and live in our county. There are issues with attendant crime related to drugs, you know, break-ins and thefts and things like that. I would say that our statistics show we have actually done better on crime the last 2 years. Steubenville really is in many ways a quintessential small American town. We've got a population of about 18,000, just a little over. We've gone through a tremendous upheaval with the closing of our steel mills. We are a steel mill town. And yet we've come on the other side of that. We still are in a position where we need to present ourselves appropriately to businesses to say, this is where you want to come. You want to establish a business in Steubenville. And as head of both economic development and now the planning committees on council, I am going to be actively pursuing and inviting people to come and take a look. We have good, hardworking people, and we've got that muscle memory from the steel mill industry, even though that is not available as a job. We have a real commitment to families and many, many positive features here in town. And so we're just trying to see how do we take the vision that's on our heart for our people and flesh that out in ordinances and really focus our budget in ways that build up and strengthen the city in the way the city government needs to do, and then work with our county government to do what our county government can do.
I want to explore that a little bit further. You mentioned previously the Catholic social teaching principle of solidarity. And a lot of what you were just articulating in the last couple minutes seemed to evoke or have a strong resonance with one of the companion principles in Catholic social teaching, subsidiarity, the principle that a community of a higher order should not interfere in the internal life of a community of a lower order, or said differently, decisions should be left to the smallest, lowest, least centralized, competent authority. And a lot of what you were just sharing, it seemed to have a flavor of the people of Steubenville, the Council of Steubenville, really trying to determine and navigate their own destiny. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the extent to which the principle of subsidiarity, whether consciously or inadvertently, was playing a role or has played a role in the turnaround for the city that you were just describing.
Yes. Now, I don't know if this doesn't answer the question, ask me another way, but I would say voluntarism has played a huge role. So not only charitable contributions, which I think the people in Steubenville, even though they're not wealthy, tend to be very generous, but they're also generous with their time. So let me give you a practical example. We were not able to have more people work for our parks and recreation. We had a very limited budget, trying to keep in the black so that we are honoring our commitment that way to the people of Steubenville. At the same time, we have parks that need to be maintained. We need garbage cleaned up. We need weeds trimmed. And there are just all kinds of things that need to be done. Beautification. So we just put out the call saying, if you're interested, you know, we're going to reopen the pool, even though it seemed very iffy if we could afford to do that. But we said, look, for the people of our city, especially for the poor who can't just simply go in their backyard into a pool, let's make sure the pool reopens, but let's also add some beauty. So I met a group of people up there, and we all took plants out of our own yards, and we planted some beautiful gardens above the pool, in the pool area, many, many hours to bring a sense of beauty to that particular area. We have a whole group called Friends of Beatty Park, and they are taking this 100-acre wood that exists in our city, and they meet two or three times a week, and they do all kinds of things. They're getting rid of invasive species. They're fixing up old shelters, which we are discovering more and more history related. We actually had Civil War generals, two of which became presidents, that met in one of those shelters. Now, here's another thing, okay? We have a dilapidated bridge that has had to be closed to traffic because it's dangerous. It could actually fall apart. It's going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars to fix this bridge. This is what the people cannot do. Even our city is stretched to come up with those dollars. So the volunteers have done all that they can do. We are now applying for grants for technical assistance and also then to rebuild this bridge and to deal with the damage caused by the stream. So we probably will need not just county dollars, but even state dollars to be able to continue to restore this park for the good of all the people. But what the people can do in terms of cleaning up and maintaining, they are doing. What the city can do in terms of applying for grants, we are doing. And then we're hoping that the county and the state come alongside us. And there are just other examples that come to mind. You're working on our downtown. We have many people who have helped us set up nutcrackers and put the nutcrackers away. And it's been something that's drawn people and encouraged some economic development. And I think it will go farther. But we can't pay everybody to do everything. We need that combination of volunteering and families doing what they can do to assist the city, as well as then the city assisting the families.
That's a wonderful case study of subsidiarity in action. I suspect you've probably gotten a good sense, a good insight into the resources available at the state government level and then at the federal government level. And it seems like the current trajectory that many federal governments are on, particularly in the midst of the COVID pandemic and the large amount of public expenditures therein, it just seems like one of steady, continuous, unending growth. And meanwhile, at the community level, local governments are so constrained. How do you feel in those moments when you juxtapose the extraordinary constraint that you face at the local level with what seems to be a trajectory of expansion at the federal level?
I mean, just grave concern. They think nothing of adding trillions of dollars of debt. And I believe that debt will saddle our grandchildren and great-grandchildren for decades to come. It's so irresponsible that it's staggering. At the same time, I have to say that in the American Rescue Plan, they did specifically target local municipalities to be able to get funds. So I'll give you a practical example. Our entire budget last year was $13.7 million. Through the American Rescue Plan, we are being sent $14.1 million, more money than we have in our entire budget. Now, we can't just take a year off our budget. There are many, many constraints, and the final rule just came out this week. They printed a copy for me and delivered it today. It's over 400 pages, and I will read it all because I want to know every possible way we can spend these dollars. This is a once-in-a-lifetime expenditure. So we are rebuilding so much of our town. Water and sewer, for whatever reason, were neglected. Pipes were not fixed. We have even found, if you can imagine, as we've begun to do this process renewal, we have found pipes not just made of clay and obviously of lead. We have found a wooden pipe that's over 100 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Hollowed.
It's unbelievable. And sewer structures that are just bricks that were cemented together. I mean, and when the money flowed through the mill, I have no clue what that council did with all that money, but they did not follow through on caring for the basic needs of this town, like infrastructure. So we're very grateful, and a lot of this money is going to have to go underground in our waters and our sewer lines. And it's not going to be beautiful things that we can see, but it's going to be for the good of the people. And we will make as prudent a decision as we can possibly make about those dollars. So on the one hand, I'm saddened that the government has just created this huge amount of cash. At the same time, it's a moment where we have in our leadership the possibility of serving our city and our people long-term, making really wise decisions about what we can do with these funds. And so the money is here. I'm not going to say, well, we shouldn't have gone into debt, so We won't receive the funds. We will take them. We will hopefully make the best decisions that we can possibly make. And then we'll see how we build from there. But I think the idea of going into debt, the way the federal government is just a travesty and very, very imprudent.
Yeah, and it does seem like that's one area where the teachings of our faith and subsidiarity and the common good can really play some benefit and help orient and steer decisions and actions. There's one other kind of federal, local theme that I'd like to hear your thoughts on. It's been very striking, very unsettling in some ways to see some of the, see how local governments have been entangled in issues and movements in recent years that have been national and international in their scope. And I'm thinking in particular in this regard, the calls in the United States for defunding the police and the issues related to racism and racial justice and gender equality and critical race theory, all of that. I mean, often we get caught up in these issues at kind of the big macro level. But how do those trickle down at the local level? Have you and your colleagues on Steubenville Council had to navigate any of these issues like defunding the police? And if so, how have you responded and what's been the reality on the ground for you folks?
Yes. And I can only speak up to the present. I don't know what all will go on for this new council that just began meeting last Tuesday. But I would say to a person, our last council would not have considered defunding the police. No one I'm not aware of any group in town that would have brought that to council. This is, again, small town America. And small town America gets the value of our first responders, our police, our fire, our ambulance service. And so there is nothing we would do that would weaken that. If anything, we look to strengthen it. And we have a city manager who worked for years in the national DEA. And so, in fact, his father is the last police chief. And so there's great regard and gratitude for all of those who serve our community in public service. And anything that would even emerge, I think, would be shot down so quickly. And I hope it would. I think it's a very foolish venture. And I grieve, especially for the minority communities that I think are so deeply harmed by the movement of defunding the police. It's really a very serious breach of the trust politicians have been given for the safety and well-being of their people.
On the topic of schools and education and the like, what's the atmosphere? What's the environment in your community? Does council have any kind of jurisdiction or oversight as it relates to the local schools? Or what's your role there?
I realize I'm in danger of painting Steubenville as this too good to be true town. But I have to tell you again, the superintendent of the public schools is a very committed Catholic. And there are many, many Christians who teach in every level of our public education. I have not had a single individual come to me and say critical race theory in any form is being taught. We are a fully integrated city. About 17% of our population is Black, maybe 1% Hispanic, and then Asian would be even less. But it has been that way for decades and decades and decades. And so our schools became integrated years before they, quote unquote, had to be. Again, I am a white person, and that may mean that I don't know, I'm not sensitive to barriers, but I would say truly, neighborhoods, there's no exclusive white neighborhood in town. We really follow our housing laws and fair housing, and so I'm not aware of people refusing to sell homes or refusing to rent homes to people of color. I imagine we can always do better in understanding what people have gone through and how we can strengthen our relationships. But I think in Steubenville, we're in a really great place. And we have a very forward-thinking public school. They're going to be building a 3-story STEM building downtown in order to help even high school students begin to get credits toward what would amount to very good paying jobs and trying to keep kids local. So I would say we have a very positive relationship with the Catholic schools, with the private schools, with the public schools here in town.
I just want to round out this segment here on, you know, your direct experience on city council and some of the issues that you've felt passionately about and that you've been involved in and tried to move forward. I'm just curious to hear, have there been any issues for you presented moral dilemmas or really engaged or challenged your conscience? I think sometimes we might have this sense that some of the more pressing social issues are often stick handled at the federal or the state level. But, you know, I got to thinking, and it's certainly at the municipal level, if there were folks who wanted to put up an abortion clinic, I mean, you got to get the zoning permission to do that. So have you ever encountered anything like that? Any moments where you felt like your principles or your conscience was really challenged? And if so, how did you navigate that?
Right. So on the issue of abortion, I don't know if there ever has been an abortion clinic in our county, but we've lived here 31 years and there's been no hospital or clinic that has done abortions in any of those 31 years. There was one doctor who referred, but even he was challenged enough that he stopped doing that before we moved here. So that has not emerged at all as an issue. And I think when we have our pro-life banquet, hundreds of people come, every party affiliation. And I would say generally, this area is very pro-life. But we did hit an issue on medical marijuana. I would just say in terms of my conscience, I could not vote for permitting medical marijuana to be a business in Steubenville. I brought in experts who really spoke to the strength of current marijuana, which is much stronger. You know, I think when people my age think about marijuana, they think, oh, it's not that bad. And they don't understand it's been strengthened. And I have many, many concerns. And so what had come before council was the state of Ohio had allowed medical marijuana, even though we voted on both medical and regular marijuana as a state, and two-thirds of the people voting said they did not want it. This Republican Congress, now at least 4 years ago, maybe it was five, went ahead on their own and legalized medical marijuana. And so then the question becomes, does your municipality allow businesses to come in and sell it? And I was saddened by council voting for that. I did not. And we don't have to vote in lockstep, but I felt that they caved. And I think difficult cases make bad laws. And there are people who I'm sure have found some benefit from it, whether it's very severe non-ending headaches or cancer, but it was already being allowed in the county and I saw no need to bring it into the city, especially when we're trying to communicate to kids that drugs are not the way to go. Whether that's a moral issue for everybody, I don't know. And I wouldn't say people sinned by allowing it, but for me, it was a faith dilemma. And I felt like I brought good information. I tried to educate council as best I could, and I felt the evidence presented was not refuted, but simply people saying, it's going to be a business somewhere, let it be Steubenville. These are good-paying jobs, and it's like, wow, so is prostitution. What are we going to do? Come on, you know? So anyway, I mean, I realize even for your listeners, they may say, wow, that's not much of a moral issue. But for me, it was a challenge. I prayed about it. I really felt that I needed to take a stand against it. I had some people pretty rude, you know, saying, well, hope you're never in severe pain and needing. And I just said, in my heart of hearts, I could not support that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is certainly a challenging issue. And arguably, it's one that does engage the principle of the common good and how you assess and determine that. Up here in Canada, we've had marijuana legalized for several years. And it's been interesting to see the practical effects of the rollout of that action, even in this small community outside of Ottawa that I live in. Just in the last couple of weeks, there were announcements about two new cannabis stores being established in our community. And it's not very large, so kind of sounds a little similar to Steubenville, just a couple thousand people. And you think, wow, I mean, what does that say about us that not just one, but two cannabis stores are being set up just from a per capita basis? This is ridiculous. And what does this say about us? You know, mindful that the stores sell different products and what have you, but you know, they sell some products which into the the hands of the wrong person or the wrong child at the wrong time at the wrong age, I mean, it's not good for them. It's not good for their health. It's not good for their soul.
And the idea that, you know, if you legalize it, then at least you can tax it. Well, you tax what you can tax, but it does not stop any black market. I had a child living out with his family in Colorado, and they just couldn't believe the devastation they saw in Denver as people, you know, were just doing mind numbing, you know, and yes, people are in pain, but that means we need to share the gospel, and we need to talk about truth and goodness and beauty and help people find solutions. I will share one sort of interesting thing that occurred because I am a person of faith. I memorize scripture, and as I headed into my first council meeting, the one that I had memorized was Joshua 1:8. I was so excited and then very nervous, like, oh, what am I doing? And it says, this is when Joshua was ready to lead the people of Israel into Canaan. And he turns to the Lord, and the Lord says, "Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you will go, even into council chambers, Kimberly." And you know, and that is such a gift and such a blessing. I have sought to have a good relationship with every person on council. That doesn't mean that I think I've persuaded them to vote with me on something, but treating them with dignity, with respect, is a way in which I am being Christ-like in council chambers. I've led in prayer. And I think that's important. One day I had someone call me last year. We have these nutcrackers, 6-foot nutcrackers outside, and you can walk around and see them, and they're beautiful. But last year we put some out. We didn't put all of them out, but we had them on display. And someone called me and was very upset. You know, are you gonna wipe down the nutcrackers and make sure that no one, these are outdoor, okay? Are you gonna wipe them down? Is someone gonna police whether or not they're 6 feet apart? You know, and I said, no, we're gonna actually allow personal responsibility. People who feel like that would endanger them won't come. I said, we set them up so you can actually drive down the street and see them. So you don't even have to get out of your car and you can still enjoy them. But if you don't feel like you can come, don't come. I don't want you to risk your health. And he said, it's just irresponsible. And I said, what's the worst thing that could happen? And he said, you could die. And I said, no, that's not the worst thing. He was like, what? I said, people could die outside a state of grace. And none of us actually have to. And there was this pause, and I could tell he was thinking, I am talking to my councilwoman, right? But we have to speak the truth. We have to speak the truth. And sadly, I think the atheists and the agnostics in politics have no trouble speaking the truth, saying a man's a woman or a woman's a man. They don't hesitate to speak lies, actually, not the truth. And we have to be bold in speaking the truth. It doesn't mean that politics is simply, you know, a revival. I talk about water and sewer. I don't talk about the Lord. But at the same time, I pray about all these issues. And I'm begging God for creative solutions and outside the box thinking and ways to communicate what I think is important in a way that they will find attractive and want to do what is right for the people. And I hope more Catholics and faith-filled Christian people who are Protestant will get into politics because we're needed.
Oh, that's an excellent segue just into what we wanted to spend our last few minutes with you on. Our faith calls us to participate in and to sanctify public life as much as possible, to cooperate with the civil authorities and building up society in a spirit of truth, justice, and freedom. As you say, though, it's no secret, living out our faith in the public square seems like a daunting challenge for many of us. Many citizens, Catholics included, we can get discouraged. We might question the value of spending what precious little free time we have on matters of public affairs. So based on the years you've spent as a city councilor, you know, what would you say to those folks about getting engaged in the process and having their voices heard?
Well, it's easy to criticize and stand apart from things, but there are skills, talents, abilities that could be used to build up the common good. It might be that you just get to know some of the politicians who are really faith-filled people and let them know how much you pray for them and be a volunteer. It could be that you actively pursue certain individuals that you think could be great leaders and you do what you can to campaign for them so that they get elected. Because one thing about it, you either do the work beforehand or you do the work afterwards. If a lousy person gets in, how much time will you waste writing letters and making phone calls and beating your head against a wall to counter a bad policy when you could have worked hard to get a good person in that just needed encouragement? And then for some, it is saying, Lord, I will go where you want me to go. And if you want me to go into the public square to serve at some level politically, I'm available. But don't just be available. I pursued it with every creative thing I could, even down to the end where I had set up all these coffees and done all these things. The last 10 days, first time through, I said to the group of people, I had a little group of people who met with me every single week. I called them my kitchen cabinet. And we just brainstormed ideas. And I said, okay, I have invited people to come to me. Where can I go where people will be? And so we came up with a schedule. We advertised it in the paper. I was at one restaurant for breakfast and one restaurant for lunch and one for dinner. And then the next day on Sunday, I went to the bar where council actually usually used to have council. They had public council and then they all went to this particular bar. And that's when they really decided things back in the day when the mob was very active in Steubenville. And someone called me and said, you have no right to go to that bar. And I said, it's a public bar and I'm going to show up and I'm going to have friends and I hope you'll be there. I want to meet you. I had about 20 people who came, including one woman who had a conceal and carry gun and a cane that opens goodness. Up as a sword. I had another man who had a conceal and carry, a former police officer who said, Kimberly, one person disturbs you from giving your speech or whatever. He said, I'm on it. And we walked in and there were no troubles, but I went to the people because I thought there is nowhere I will not go in this city. I will go everywhere our people are because I want the privilege of serving. It is public service. I think the hardest thing for me, besides being undercut at times by people who said one thing to my face and then worked against me behind their backs, The other thing that was hard, is hard, is how slowly government moves. But I've come to believe that on the positive side, it means we also cannot make mistakes quickly. And so we need to find the way to move things forward, I think, at a quicker pace. But the idea that it goes through committees and comes to council and has hearings and all of that, that's not a bad thing. It's just a slow process.
We've talked a little bit about encouragement for the faithful to get engaged in the process to begin with. I mean, simply just to show up and put a foot forward and make some kind of contribution. For any of our listeners who might be discerning the prospect of running for office themselves, any parting advice or wisdom for them?
Talk to people you respect and see if they encourage you in this direction. Start gathering signatures. You can always pull out of a race, but if you don't submit your signatures on time, you don't have an option for running. Gather people around you who will really work with you and for you to formulate what you want to present as a platform and how you get that word out. And then know your community. In our community, door-to-door is very important. People want to meet you. And in our community, signs are really important. So I had 250 signs in people's yards and large signs in front of businesses. That said so much for the 6 weeks before the election as people drove by, because they might not know me, but they know that person who has a sign for me in the yard. So that may not work for your area. Maybe it's something else. I went to football games and passed out flyers. I went to card parties and gave out favors. I did anything and everything I could because I wanted to give the best race I could. And then if the people did not choose me, then I knew I had done my best and God was saying, no, the door is closed. But instead the door really swung open wide. And I think I have been a part of some very important things here.
Last question, I can't help but ask. Did you have a patron saint for your campaign? Did you have a particular devotion when you were throwing your hat in the ring?
You know, there are a lot of saints that I'm very close to, but I would say St. Thomas More was one of the ones that I went to and still do. He was faithful. God gave him that position of political power. He also removed him from that position of political power. I think it's really important to marshal every support you can. I have sprinkled holy water before. I have sprinkled holy salt, drops holy salt on my way into council before. I have begged God to intervene, calling on my guardian angel to work with their guardian angels. I've prayed the St. Michael prayer. And honestly, we have a mayor who, before we have council, every single solitary week, he has someone lead in prayer. And then we begin the meeting. So it's not officially, no one can write us up for having prayer in our meeting, but it is beautiful. And he even has council members lead in prayer. So I'm very grateful for the privilege.
That's wonderful. Well, I look forward to when there's viral footage of Kimberly Hahn sprinkling holy salt and entering into the chambers at Steubenville. You mentioned earlier you're 2 years through your current term. You got two more years left. What's next for you? I mean, Congresswoman Hahn, Senator Hahn, Governor Hahn, they all got a good ring to them. So what do you see looking forward?
I don't have any idea. Unfortunately, our charter does have term limits, so I can only be council at large for two more years. Someone in the government asked me recently whether or not I could run for my ward and just continue to serve on city council, and that might be. I am 64, and I have my 21st grandchild on the way, so maybe I pull back. Thank you. Maybe I pull back and just focus on speaking and podcasting alongside Scott. But I'm open to anything, and we will see what door opens.
Well, we wish you the best in that discernment. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your service to your constituents, for being such a wonderful example of engagement in the public square, what is possible when we live out our faith, our Catholic faith, in public affairs. It's a wonderful example, a wonderful witness, and we're so glad that we got to learn about that side of you. Kimberly Hahn, Councilwoman Hahn, thank you so much for being here with us on Crown and Crozier. God bless.
God bless you too, Patrick.
Thanks for tuning in. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts and help us to reach more listeners by leaving us a rating or referring us to a friend. If you'd like to partner with us in the delivery of this podcast, head on over to our website at crownandcrozier.com and click the heart button in the top right-hand corner to learn more about making a one-time or monthly donation. We're sincerely grateful for you listening in, and we look forward to providing you with future episodes on church, state, and faithful citizenship. Until then, God bless.